The following podcast is a part of RadioMisfits.com.
Thank you, Todd Downing, for visiting us on Misfits Making It.
Well, thank you for having me and calling me a misfit.
Well, you've had a really interesting path because you didn't start out with the life and career you have now is not what you thought it would be.
It's very strange. Like, I sort of, I guess I started in the 90s in New York making like these very weird short films, pretty dead ones too. And, you know, they did really well on the festival circuit, played some gallery museum type things too. Mm-hmm. And so I started getting grants and I was all like in that sort of artsy world a bit. Then I ended up moving to London with my ex. Couldn't get a grant for the life of me, so I ended up in documentaries. So then I started doing these like really depressing British documentaries. And then somehow like I started coming back to New York and someone hired me for a comedy show. So then I started having this dual life where I was like doing like comedy in New York and, you know, soldiers committing suicide for the BBC in London. And then I just somehow ended up now with, I don't know where I am now, but editing trippy things with Natasha Lyonne and Patricia Arquette.
Not bad. And how, like, so you're in London and you were there for a long time.
12 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And did you like, did you ever think comedy was where you wanted to go?
Well, like the shorts that I made, even though they were like kind of in the art world-ish kind of thing, they were comic, you know, they were funny. So I'm not sure how much I meant them to be fun. Like, I wasn't like, oh, I'm a comedian, you know, I have to, you know, whatever. I think I just have maybe a funny world point of view, worldview. And then I don't know, it just kind of happened. And then I just started hanging out. You know, I did Difficult People, which is on the, when Hulu first started with Julie Klausner and Billy Eichner. And the showrunner of that, Scott King, is probably one of the funniest people I've ever met. So I think I've just been around, and Amy Poehler was the exec. And so I just was around funny people a lot. So maybe I sort of learned comedy a little bit more, you know, just by absorbing it, you know, by osmosis from these kind of hilarious people.
Yeah, I mean, Difficult People is so fun. So many funny people were involved in that show.
I love that show. It's like my litmus test whenever I date. I mean, I have a partner now, but like whenever I would date someone, I'm like, we have to watch Difficult People. If you don't like it, we can't be together.
I love it. Yeah. And then, you know, people are always like a lot of times, like, how did you go about, like you said, it just kind of happened. Like the job, is that right? Like, did you just like got a call one day?
Yeah, I guess I missed the sort of one part. Like, it's like, because I was making my own shorts, you know, doing everything basically, and I always sort of edited on the side just to make money, but weird things like how to dress a mannequin corporate video for Armani. You know what I mean? Like just completely lame, horrible stuff. And when I went to London, somehow like I wiggled my way into this doc world, and so then I just became an editor and I sort of gave up being a director because I liked editing better, to be honest, because all you're doing is creating the whole time. And, you know, directing, you're dealing with personalities and budgets and like, you know what I mean? It's like, it seems like 90% of it is kind of bureaucratic. Whereas editing, you just sit there with the footage all day and you just like create, you know? So I think that's how I was just like, oh, this is actually the better part of filmmaking. But in the Difficult People I got because it was like, it was just like a friend, my ex's friend became the showrunner and he really liked my short films, you know what I mean? And thought they were funny. And Hulu was just, you know, they were tiny. They just started. They hadn't, you know, nothing had happened yet. But he really wanted me to be on it because he thought I just had the right sensibility. And I think, you know, Hulu, was kind of like, why are you hiring this doc guy for this comedy? But he pushed it through and then it just kind of, you know, and from that, he went to Smilf and I went him there. Then I met Leslie Headland on Smilf and she took me to Russian Doll, you know, and then the Mrs. America people got me from Russian Doll. And this film I just did with Patricia Arquette, Gonzo Girl, she got me from Natasha, you know what I mean? So it's just kind of, you just get passed around as an editor, which is good. I'm fine with that.
And it definitely, like, is testament to, like, just making something and putting it out there, because, like, there was a gap of time between you making these weird little shorts in New York and then you getting hired back in New York for comedy.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of, yeah, you just gotta, because you never know who's gonna, you know, it's like Scott responded to those shorts, and then, you know, and then when I got to Natasha and Leslie Headland responded to, like, some work that I did before. Yeah, and then Patricia liked, you know, what Natasha did with Russian Doll. And it's just like, oh, and you never know, you know, none of the, you know, Russian Doll was pretty big, but, you know, they're not like, I didn't do, you know, Chernobyl or anything, you know what I mean? So it's just kind of like, oh, even when you're doing your weird things, it's like people kind of, oh, that's what I like, you know what I mean? So I try and just keep in that world, you know?
Yeah, like I was saying, like, even this
rather than chasing the big show,
right? Like, even how I like get people for this podcast or think of who to interview, it's like, well, quirky projects are going to have quirky people.
Yeah,
yeah. And interesting people.
I asked you, I was like, why me? I'm like, well, look at what you've done.
It's amazing, I guess, because, like, you know, even like you think about, like, when you do your own projects, like, you want to get people who have the similar vibe, and it's kind of
totally. 100%. Because, like, no one agrees on, like, there's so many, like, you know, super successful movies or, like, prestige television even, which I think is just god awful. You know what I mean? And there's so much stuff that gets panned by the critics that I just absolutely love, you know? So, you know, I think you just got to do what you like. And once you start chasing, you know, chasing this, I don't know, ethereal success kind of thing, you know, it just doesn't, I don't know.
Right. We talk about that a lot. And because it's like, if you just chase success for success's sake, it just seems like,
soul crushing.
Super soul. And you make the wrong, like, anytime I've tried to do that, I've made absolutely the wrong decisions. And, like, the
100%. Yeah, totally. I'm like, well, I mean, you know, they weren't horrible experiences, but you're just like, oh, like, you kind of get on a job and you're like, oh, these aren't my people. Like, you have lunch with them and you're kind of like, oh, we have nothing in common.
Yeah.
You know, so it's much nicer when you're, like, vibing and you can't stop. You know, I like not being able to talk about the work or, like, with the director or the showrunner, you know, we'll text each other at, like, 10 p.m. and be like, oh, wait, what about, you know what I mean? It's like, you're just... I like the emotional investment in it. You know, it's draining, obviously, but it's much more rewarding to be, like, invested, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, because it means something. It's not just, like, you're not punching the clock. You're, like, really invested artistically in something.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a project where you were, like, not invested artistically?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we don't have to say what it was, but, like,
absolutely not. No, I've never done ones where, well, no, actually, there was one I did a while ago where I was just like, I just want to kill myself. But even the ones that I wasn't totally into, like, they were, you know, nice people and creative people. It just felt, you know, just sometimes you're just like, oh, it doesn't, you know, totally integrate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I mean, look, like, I've avoided reality television, fingers crossed, you know, with the strike and
amazing.
All. Like, you know what I mean? I've never done that. Which I think is great, because I know people who did it, and they, you know, they just started making so much money on it, and then they just got trapped, and it was like, oh god, you know, you don't want that.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like, you, once you start doing it, you get, you know, if you really follow what you're into, you know, you're going to keep getting jobs that you're into, you know, because that's what people see you as. Yeah.
Right. And also so many jobs are just by people who are looking for, they're like, if you want to get an editor for a reality show, you go to the last reality show that you liked. And that's how you get recommended.
100%.
Right. Although if you did 90 Day Fiancé, I would think that's awesome.
Okay. I'll give that a pass.
I've never seen 90 Day Fiancé?
I've never seen anything.
Oh, my God.
Well, I don't know. What is it? I've never even heard of it.
It's awful. Like, it is the most, it's the worst example, like, one of the worst examples in my mind of human behavior. It's awful because it's like,
sounds like it from the title.
It's basically like people who in America, they they meet someone online and they want to come back with them. And
It's like mail order bride kind of deal.
Kind of like that, but like usually, it's often like who's playing who is like the question often in there, and everyone's crazy because like there's like everyone's. It's the worst exam. America looks awful because it's not our best that's looking for people.
It's not
overseas.
Hard to do.
And then there was like there's one time this one guy he like goes to meet this girl he knows online, and he like he's taking a canoe in the middle of the Amazon jungle, gets off to this little village that of like tin huts, and he goes in the hut and he was talked to the dad of this woman he wants to marry, and the dad takes one look at this guy and is like, my daughter ain't going home with your ass. Like he was not, that's how bad.
What channel is it on, or streamer, or whatever you call
maybe
it these
Brahma,
days?
One of those. Yeah, one of those.
Bravo's the one. I'm just like, it's
great. The reason why I love it is because it's great for characters and like understanding human behavior.
I know writers and actors that do that, like actually do like it because of that. They can, you know what I mean? You can get inspired.
The editing of all
those shows is so atrocious. I'm just like, oh, I can't with like. You know, everything has a sound effect. Every shot is like half a second long. Like, ugh, I like to linger.
Well, I guess my question for you is how do I know about editing? Because I don't know how to evaluate. How do we evaluate if something's edited well?
Neither do I. It's hard because it's so, you know, it's like you don't ever know what the editor did or what the editor brought to the table, or if it was like, you know, you can actually have a terrible editor, but the director or showrunner has to sit there and tell them every single frame to cut on, you know what I mean? And they didn't, and all the ideas were theirs. So I think that's so weird about like ACE or the Eddie Awards or Emmys and also, you know, it's like, you have no idea what the editors, you know, I guess if they have a track record and you see it happen over and over again, you know, but you never really know what they, or maybe the footage was just absolutely terrible, or, you know, the acting was terrible and you have to like fix someone's performance. Like people don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I've done that, and the actor has gotten an award. You know? And I'm just like, that was not editing. I mean, that was not acting. That was editing. You know, it's really hard to judge. You know what I mean? Because you just don't, you know. Or music choices. Sometimes it's the director picking all the music, or the music supervisor, or the editor has good taste. You know, it's hard to tell. But I think the track record is what shows if someone is, you know, mm-hmm. knows what they're doing.
And then like now everyone's an editor on their phone making these videos. Do you have any tips on how we can not make your eyes bleed?
Well, I know scientifically, medically, like you're supposed to like every 45 minutes step away for 15 minutes, which is not practical when you're working with someone in the room, because for them they're like, what are you doing? You know, you're wasting time. So I think it's really like that's also why probably I don't watch much television at all, because after I work, you know, I'm staring at monitors all day. You know, the last thing I want to do is look at a monitor when I get home, you know, and it's like, it's really difficult. So I think it's just, you just got to try not to look at the monitor. I mean, you know, that whole standing desk thing has been a little bit of a game changer too. That helps, you know, the older you get.
Yeah.
Were you talking about, is that what you're talking about? Eyes bleed, like physically, physically hurting your eyes?
Well, that's good to know. I always wonder how editors like figure, because your eyes don't bleed from all the staring you do.
Yeah.
Also, just because of everyone's an editor on their phone for like their TikTok videos, or blah, 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 Instagram videos. So like, I'm sure I would assume that editing that takes place in those videos is pretty awful to someone who's professional.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's different because when you're doing storytelling, like, you know, people sometimes think editing is like cool, flash, flash. And like, yeah, the kids can do that like on their phones pretty amazingly now. But it's like, can you tell a story? Can you get someone invested in the character? I think that's the strongest part of editing. I mean, the most important part of editing, you know, now. Because it's like, now anybody can make it like, oh, look, put on this filter. Just, you know, AI is going to have it edit itself, you know, soon. But it's, you know, are they going to be able, I know, it's scary. Netflix just put out a promo video of like AI in editing, and they're showing how, you know, AI can do match cuts. And it's this 2-minute really flashy video. And they had like a handful of my edits in there. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm honored or more terrified that you're using my editing to train a computer. Yeah.
Can they do that later?
Well, I don't own the footage. You know what I mean? It's like Netflix owns the footage. So, yeah, it was interesting. I saw it. I was like, wow. But I don't know. Maybe I just have my head in the sand. I'm not super worried. But like I said, you know what I mean? I think part of it's like story. A lot of it is story, performance. Not sure how computers are going to do that. And also like the mistakes, you know what I mean, are what's interesting. And things that you wouldn't normally do. Like, you know, that happens with Natasha and Patricia a lot. It was like you do something. You'd be like, oh, my God, that's cool. Okay, now let's fix it. And both of them are like, no. Like, you know what I mean? Like they like the. The flaws are what give it character. You know what I mean? If it's too, you know, you don't, if it's so polished and perfect, then it's like, meh, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that for sure. I mean, well, so many like great movie moments happened.
Oh my God.
By accident.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Altman, you know what I mean? Like 50% of that is probably just like, oh, well, that happened. That's great. You know?
Yeah, totally.
Even like Larry David, you know what I mean? Curb Your Enthusiasm, you know, it's just like improv. They're just like,
okay. Right.
I mean, that's not that much. I guess it's about editing, but more about performance,
right.
You know? So I like, that's what it's good. I think also going back to this whole misfit world, it's like, that's what's great about working with these people is like, they're not trying to just polish it to nothing. You know what I mean? It's like, they're like, oh, leave the rough edges, leave it, you know? And
just super cool.
Yeah.
And then where do you think you learned story from?
You know, I didn't have much of a background in story. It's not like, you know, I studied literature or creative writing or anything. I think I took one short story writing class, but I think it's just being in it for ages, you know, and I started, you know, with half hour comedy and then I did, you know, half hour dramedy and then hour longs and then I did a feature, you know what I mean? So it kind of almost, it was just very logical. Like, oh, I can, you know, tell the story. And I think it's just, that was just learning on the job. You know what I mean? I'm not quite sure how else, you know, I think some people are innately writers, but I think for me, it was just learning while doing it and seeing what works. And
It reminds me, like Greta Gerwig said something like, you know, we all know how to tell stories innately. We're constantly telling stories. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't use like any sort of like formal, you know, there's all these like theories and structures. She just kind of feels her way through the story. It sounds like you kind of have that instinct as well. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think definitely. I'm not like, oh, the inciting incident has to happen in 16 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you sort of think about it. You're like, oh, this has the movie started yet? You know, but I think, you know, you make rules and then you're like, you find the very next job you do, you're like, oh, that's a stupid rule. And you break it. You know what I mean? So you can never, I don't know. I mean, there's a few things I cling on to, which has nothing to do with storytelling. Like I hate cutting to props. Like, oh, look at these persons wearing leg warmers. Isn't that funny? You know what I mean? Like shit like that. Like I'm just like, let it just exist in the scene. I hate the cut away to a visual pun or joke. But other than that, you know what I mean? It's just like small, stupid stuff like that, which I probably break anyways. You know? But like
prop editing. What is a prop comedy? This prop editing.
You know what I mean? Where they're like, oh, this show takes place in the 80s and people wearing leg warmers. And so let's cut to their leg warm, like a real close up of the leg warmers, just in case you missed. Like that kind of thing, you know, where it's just like pointing out the joke. I find it's not very funny. You know what I mean? It's much funnier when it just exists in the world, you know?
And it's just them being, totally. And then what do you do? Like, so I guess you're working with people who are on your wavelength. Cause it's like, I guess I've heard from editor friends, like sometimes they sit with the director and they're like, explain their case. And then the director explains their case. Mm-hmm. And then they got to kind of, the director is like, no, I think my case is the one.
Yeah.
You got to just do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. It's like when I interview a lot of times, I like to talk about what movies they like, you know, because then at least, you know, or music and like, so you know, if you have the same aesthetic, at least, because sometimes, you know, you get into something and someone's like, I love, you know, Tarkovsky or something. And then the other one loves, I don't know. Like, I don't even know who to say. Like, I don't know. It doesn't, you know, the polar opposite. And you're kind of like, oh, right. And you can love both, but there's sometimes where things you just don't like, you know what I mean? And you're just, and it's just taste.
Like, no,
So yeah, I think a lot of, I think showrunners and directors, when they interview you two, are really feeling you out for your taste. Because then I get into these rooms with them and like, all of a sudden we realize, oh, we love this too. And we love that too. And there are these weird, like obscure things, you know, that only would have happened if you realized you had the same taste from the beginning, or, you know.
That's super cool. And so is that basically how you decide if a project's right for you?
Yeah.
By taste?
Yeah, kind of. I think so. I think it's also just like, if they, some of it's like, why are they making it? You know what I mean? If they're making it just to make a show and they got a deal and blah, blah, you can sort of tell the emptiness of that. But if like, if they really have a story to tell or something they really want to try out or do something, like I think most of the things I've done, people have kind of taken big swings. And I like that, you know, a lot, you know, I'm just, I don't really have any interest in doing something that's like, okay, this is going to be medium good, you know, it's going to be solid. Like, that's just, that's really boring to me. I'd rather it be like a failure, you know what I mean? With a big swing than just, like, oh, that's fine. Nothing bores me more than the middle, like high or low. Sufficient. Yes.
Sufficient. It's good. You said something in an interview about there's nothing worse than bad improv, which is nothing worse than watching bad improv.
Yes.
And for me, there is nothing worse than being involved in bad improv. That's why I don't really do improv.
Is that talking about a Star Wars board? Oh my God, there's a scene in that. I'm just like, oh, that's the worst. Anyway, yes, bad improv. I mean, great improv is amazing. I don't know. Yeah. I don't remember. When did I say that?
I think it was an interview. I forget. It was with a, it was during COVID, I believe. And it was with someone just talking about, and they were more editing, technical editing
things. Oh, okay. But sort of, you know, personally, I hate it just like creatively, but also as an, just like the technical part of it, of trying to cut something together is like, oh my God. Like, this, you know, everyone's like, they start the day playing it one way, and then the script is completely changed by the end of the day, like when they turn the camera around, and you're just like, how do you put this together?
Right. What I find so interesting is like, sometimes people are, seem like they're in two different movies.
Yes.
Like, because the
100%.
I think it was The Green Book or Sebastian Maniscalco. Like, did a, you know, he tried his best.
Yeah.
I think it was The Green Book. He tried his best, but he's a comedian and he's not an actor. And he's standing next to an actor who's an actor. And it's looked like they're on two different movie sets.
Yeah. And it's funny, too. You can have the most amazing, I'm not going to name names, but like, it's like a guest star on some show that I did, you know, like Oscar winning actor, like incredible, but like could not improv comedy. For like, for the life of them, you know what I mean? The gender of the person, you know what I mean? It was just like, it was really interesting to see like, oh, you're this fucking like the top tier actor. But if you don't follow the lines, then completely lost. It's really, it was interesting to see. And then, you know, other people that aren't great actors, but can like keep your attention on the camera by just doing their thing, you know?
Yeah. And like, it's okay, right? It's like everyone's kind of different, good at different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what do you feel like as an editor? Do you feel like, what is the equivalent that in editing? Is there something like that in editing? Like some people are good at.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a little bit of, like, I think the studios think this is much more true than I do, but like, you know, they're like, oh, if you're a doc person, you can only do doc. If you're a comedy person, half hour comedy person, you can only do that. If you're a feature person, which I think is kind of like basic. You know, not very intelligent thing to say.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, knowing how to make someone laugh and, like, knowing how to, you know, unravel a complicated story in a documentary with no scripts are definitely two different skills. You know what I mean?
Right.
Some people can do both.
Right.
Some people can do one, like, amazingly, but not the other.
Right.
So, yeah.
So in your journey, you've, like, created stuff and then, like, the opportunities happened and you kind of let it flow. Like, it sounds very, like, chill. Like, was it chill at the time?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have, like, a plan. You know what I mean? I'm not, like...
But I mean, like, were you upset, like, worried at all? You know, like, some people, like, be like, oh, my path was this. And in the meanwhile, like, it was very chaotic. Or some people are just always chill.
Yeah, like, no. I don't have a path. You know what I mean? And I think what's kind of like, I just like look for interesting projects in whatever kind of format they're in, like Docker feature or whatever. And, you know, and like when COVID happened, like luckily I had this doc background. I was like, oh, these doc people don't stop. So I called this doc director that I know, you know, I mean, it was like, hey, do you know anything? And I got like two jobs out of it, you know, so I worked like all through COVID, you know, because they just go. They don't care.
They're like, oh, the world's falling apart. Yeah, more material.
Opportunity. Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, we're filming in an Italian hospital right now with people dying, you know, in March 2020. I was like, really? Okay. Yeah. That's like for Frontline. You know, I worked for Frontline quite a bit, too. You know what I mean? And they're just like, and the BBC, you know, the British journalists are just like fearless. Like, they'll go to any war zone. You know what I mean? They just, they don't give a fuck. So yeah, I think that helps me be chill, is knowing that like I have these different worlds that I have my feet in.
Yeah, and since you've done so much docs, you said something in the interview, like the BBC is really strict on standards for documentaries. Like you can't just.
Yeah, it's really.
You can't just make someone say something.
No, and like you have to show the other side. They even go so far as like, if you interview someone for a documentary, they don't make the final cut, the producer has to call them and tell them they're not in it, which is just like unheard of in the United States. Like people just, I feel so bad.
Right. Because I know a doc producer in Australia who says like, I will never do a documentary because I've seen criminal things happen in the editing room where it's like,
yeah.
Now, how do we know as consumers, since you're on the back end, how do we know?
That's real. Well, like, I think it's almost like branding. Real. Like, you know, if it's BBC, if it's British, they have, you know, BBC especially because it's publicly funded, they can't get caught. You know, if it's Frontline for PBS, you know, who I think have like never lost a case of being sued, you know what I mean? And they're like, whatever, year, 30 year history. I don't know how long they've been on, you know, like Frontline is the, like, it's kind of, sometimes it's a little bit annoying, you know, cause you're like, oh really? We can't say, you know, and you're, but there's very, like they cross all their T's, dot all their I's. So I think it's like, if you see something from that, yes. You know, I mean, if it's the thing where you have to watch, I think more is like the feature docs, you know what I mean? That don't really have those behind them and they have this more mainstream studio. Like, there's some stories on that, like, I've heard, like they don't care.
Like, did you just see the Conor McGregor documentary?
No. Mm-mm. The fighter?
/ like PR piece, puff piece. He's an MMA guy.
Yeah, I was gonna say UFC, but MMA, yeah.
Yeah. So we were talking about like documentaries can be misleading. They're actually just, some of them are just branded content. Have you seen, is this a new trend or has always been that way and I've been naive?
I don't know. It does seem more and more like if it's a famous person, you know, so these biographies, like they have to be involved and they have approval and you know what I mean? So you're not going to get, especially in the US, I feel like the Brits don't do that as much. Like they're much more journalists when they come to it and they, you know, want both sides. But yeah, it does seem to be, I think it is a trend. Like that's like, you know, it's just whatever to make this person look good, you know, or rehabilitate their image and stuff. It seems like that's kind of a trend.
Yeah. So Conor McGregor definitely being one of them.
Yeah.
Cause they like glossed over anything scandalous that he's done. Many things really bad, like terrible, really? Like punching. He punched an old person in a bar.
Oh, I know nothing about him other than, you know,
he's pretty evil. I mentioned him to my friend, how evil he is. I mentioned to my friend who's Irish and she was just like, went off for like 5 minutes about how he's not welcome in Ireland.
Oh,
he's
really?
A terrible human. Yeah. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
That made him look like he was like this hero, this folk hero from Ireland.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about like Navalny. Did you watch that on HBO?
I didn't. Oh. What was that about?
It's like some guy that Putin jailed. It's like, I think it won the Emmy this year or something. But they actually challenged him a bit for some of his stuff, you know. So maybe, you know, I don't think it's always the case, but a lot of the, you know, celebrity ones, I think, you know.
Right. Like, I also think like if that's how it's being funded. So if it's like, for instance, like, you know, what is it? Scatter My Ashes at Bergdorf's, which is like an amazing, I love that documentary. It's so good. It's about Bergdorf's.
Oh,
But I don't think it's funded.
Yeah. By Bergdorf.
By Bergdorf.
I know. So. Well, we could get into the Barbie movie, too. You know, it's like, I mean, I haven't seen it, but it's like, it's also, right. I just feel very hesitant. It's just like, oh, is this really just for Mattel? You know.
Well, it's definitely just for Mattel, but it's also pretty great.
Is it? Okay. I mean, I still have no desire.
Well, I mean, it was like pretty amazing sleight of hand marketing for them because they were like, they got all of these people who don't care about Barbies and would never buy them for anyone or like promote their brand to buy into their brand. Yeah. So it was like pretty brilliant. I mean, I don't care. I hate Barbie.
Yeah, I know. I love Greta Gerwig. I think, you know what I mean? I just, you know, I just think she's amazing. And Noah Baumbach too. But I, don't know. I just can't do it. I can't go.
Right. And their hands were all over it. So it's like a very smart. So you know what they were doing? They were doing the Trojan horse, like bringing Barbie, but then inserting some feminism into that.
Yeah.
To the people who would never see a feminist movie.
But I'm sort of like, in the end, who does it benefit? Mattel. Now they're gonna make the Hot Wheels movie with Lena Dunham or something weird like that. I don't know. I don't think that's true, but she is doing another Mattel. I think she is doing a Mattel movie. Anyway,
oh my God, yeah.
Things like away. It just, you know.
We
got our crumbs of feminism from it, but then in the end, you know, I don't know. I don't know if you're cynical.
Yeah. Well, they're just using it. If it wasn't good marketing and if it wasn't helping them sell stuff, they wouldn't do it. So
probably. Yeah.
It's like, but I think I was looking recently something like about the history of I Love Lucy. And they were talking about like, okay, she was talking about it so like methodically, like we had this show idea and then we sold the ad time. And then we could do the show.
Oh, really?
Something like this. Not exactly, but something like so. And I was like, oh, is it the greatest? Are you saying like the greatest comedy of all time was based on selling soap?
Yeah.
Yeah, its ability to sell soap, which is pretty.
Was that from the Amy Poehler doc that came out? I haven't seen that. I should have watched
that. Really good.
Yeah, really good. It looks fascinating.
And they have all this footage of like inside. Now, do you, now, because some people, it's footage is a huge thing with documentary. Like, do you ever have to go hunt for it? Because I know there's, well, okay, I have a little step back here. Is I came to know some documentary filmmakers when I was doing a project about Greta Garbo, and they would talk about like trying to figure out where people's papers are. Because where the papers are stored is the, like, you know, all of the stuff. Do you ever have to go look for that? Is that ever part of your...
As the editor, no. I mean, that's what they call access. I think you have great access is what they always say. You know what I mean? That's more of a producer thing.
Yeah.
And like, you know, getting relationships and stuff. But what's great about docs is you can use anything. They have, you know, fair use. So you don't have to get rights to stuff. I guess it's not someone's personal thing, but anything. Whereas like, you know, and then when Mrs. America, we use some archive, you know, from the time. But you have to pay for it. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's super expensive. You have to pay for it. It's very limited. But documentaries, you can just go wild. You can use, as long as you're commenting on it, you know, it's free.
Yeah. I guess it's like YouTube, too. Like the same rule. If you creative reuse, they call it.
Sure, yeah. But I'm not sure. I think maybe if it's comedy, too, right? Isn't it? It's like if it's a satire, you can use it. Yeah.
Yeah, because you're,
That's more pretty.
So you've done a lot of different projects. How do you know like a project is like the right one?
I don't know. You know, when you meet with the showrunner or director, it's just, you know, it's always like kind of like a blind date a little bit, the interview. You're just sort of feeling each other out, you know. Usually, you know, you know, a lot of times they know about you more, you know, why they want you more because they reach out to you first. And I don't know. I think there's a lot of times we just discuss like taste in film or music or whatever. I find that we kind of just start talking about cultural stuff and then you kind of realize whether it's a match.
Yeah.
Cause I think if you're way off base with that, then I mean, what's the point? You know, it's like,
totally.
I think this is great. You think it's awful. Like it's not going to work. So I feel like you kind of get it from just that discussion of like, what are they into? You know what I mean? It's sort of like a dating app.
Yeah. Totally. Told you. What are your red flags for you? Other than
red
taste.
Flags? Oh God. I've never really thought about it. Literally. Like I guess they come up, but, I guess it's just like, if I don't know why they're doing it, you know what I mean? If they have no, if they're just making it to be like, oh, this is hot, let's do something like this because this will sell, you know, and this is what people will watch. That's kind of a red flag where I can tell, like, if they're invested in it and they have, like, even if it's the weirdest reason they want to do it, like, if they're really into that reason, you know, then I think you're going to have something good because that just comes across, you know, yeah. Like the passion, I think. I think when it's too constructed, like, oh, this is hot now and this is hot and it's this actor and you know what I mean? Then it's kind of like, oh, well.
Yeah.
It's just going to feel
have
like
you a ever product. Had a project that you thought was going to take off and it didn't?
I'm terrible at predicting. Like I have no idea. You know, it's like when I was Russian Doll was probably the biggest thing I did, most popular. And like when I was kind of, you know, we edited, I loved it, but I was like, oh, this will be a, you know, a little culty thing, you know, that a few people, you know, whatever. And it like blew up like crazy. And then,
yeah,
you know, there's other stuff I did, Logan mentioned, which I thought like, oh, this is pretty good, you know, and then like canceled and like no one watched it. You know, so I really have no idea. Like I don't, it's strange because you lose all, you're in the edit for so long, you kind of lose perspective of, you know,
yeah,
what's going to translate.
Yeah, that is, and even when I feel like shooting it, I've heard some of my friend was telling me he was like a first AD on, I think, something with Olympia Dukakis, and everyone was like, this is gonna win awards, yeah. It's amazing.
I mean, shooting, like, especially, no, you have no idea because it's just like, what's gonna happen, you know, the edit could do anything, what is,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. And to make this such a crazy business, it's like literally you have no idea what's going on.
Which is why the studio is going into these like IP stuff, you know, because like, oh, at least it's a little something for them to grab onto, you know? It's boring. I think that's one thing. Like, definitely. I don't want to do these series that will go on forever and ever. You know what I mean? I think that's a red flag for me. It's like, I don't really want to do Star Wars. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't care.
It seems like so much work, those movies.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind the work. Great, you know, a lot of work is fine, but it's just like, at least you know, at least you have a genesis of an idea.
Totally. Well, so all the CGI, so now do you get involved in all the CGI?
It's more, a little bit. It's more and more. I mean, I think on set they're getting, you know, I don't know. I don't want to say lazy, but they're kind of like, oh, we could just do that later. You know what I mean? Like they know that anything can be done in VFX. I guess it's more VFX than CGI, but I mean, so you're cutting a lot of scenes sometimes of people just standing against a green screen, or like they're supposed to be in a stadium and there's like, you know, and they're performing in no one. And so that's, I think it's kind of, and you sort of notice the difference with the actors too. Like when the actor has no one to respond, like I did Hello Tomorrow, which was on Apple last year, and there was scenes where like they're performing to a robot, you know what I mean, it was like a puppet kind of thing, and it was strange. Like sometimes it takes them longer to get into it than like if it was an actual human actor that they're, you know, that's playing so against. I would imagine it'd be really hard for the actor just to be like pretend like someone's, you know, acting as reacting thing, you know what I mean, and there's no reaction.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like people in a room that's living from COVID. Yeah,
exactly.
That's so wild. So do you think, like, one of the things I'm worried about with the strike is that, like, I'm going to no longer have a
job,
have a career, because like, there's no more actors.
I don't know. I'm kind of optimistic because part of me is just like, there's no, how can we lose that battle? You know what I mean? It just seems so like unfathomable that they could just do that, you know, I mean, you know SAG better than me probably, but I just don't think they would agree to it. You know what I mean? Like, there's just...
Yeah.
Like,
there's no way they're going to
agree. What is the point? That's actually like signing your death warrant. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Just like, there's no way. We have the nanny on top of it. She's our president. She's like, I don't think so.
She's doing well. Even my parents now know who she is and are like very into her, you know, and they're 87. Like, this woman's amazing.
Yeah, she's pretty cool. Yeah. I've been digging her. Been digging her vibe. And so you had a movie with Patricia Arquette.
Yes, which comes out at Toronto Film Festival on September 7th, I think. I'm not sure the screening date yet. But which that was an incredible experience. Like, you know, we keep talking about acting, but like, I learned so much about acting, editing with her, you know, editing, because Willem Dafoe is, it's Willem Dafoe plays like a Hunter S. Thompson character. It's called Gonzo Girl. And it's about a young woman who comes to help him finish a book in his really druggy days in Colorado. But yeah, just editing with her and editing him with her and just getting like, figuring out what she thinks is good acting, you know what I mean? And me learning what from that, it was kind of incredible. It was just, she's like, oh, you need to do, I know this is no video, but like this hand gesture, not this hand gesture. You know what I mean? It was so specific and small, but it was an incredible wow. learning experience, you know?
Wow. Cause she was helping she was directing. She was guiding you on the takes.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
wow. I mean, how special is that?
Yeah. I mean, I think we had similar taste, and like, she liked my, said, you know, the editor's assembly is always a bit rough because it's like, you don't have any time, but it was kind of amazing too. She'd go through the takes and tell me which one she liked. And then we'd come back to that same scene like months later and we go through the takes again. She'd pick the exact same two takes or three takes. Like, she knows exactly what a good performance is. It's really kind of, I've never seen that before. That was really kind of special. Wow. Yeah.
What do you think was a good performance to her?
There
were some things that made it.
She doesn't like overacting, that's for sure. You know what I mean? Like, if you're even in a reaction shot, if they do one thing, they don't need to do another thing. You know what I mean? They don't need to, like, they turn their head a little, they don't need to turn it back. I mean, I'm it's not a hard and fast rule, but I noticed that like a couple times. I was like, oh, that's like, you did it with that thing. Like, you don't need to.
Yeah.
I think she's really, you know, it has Willem Dafoe. So he goes big, you know, in an amazing way, but she also loves the subtle, like just the small thing of like, oh, his lip is quivering there. Let's use that one. You know what I mean? And like very small stuff she's into, which is kind of great. Cause you don't know why it kind of gives this thing where the audience doesn't know why they think it's great. It's just great, you know, cause it's all these like subconscious things coming at you.
Yeah, that's really cool. And it's just like a reminder to like trust that, because there are like weird things happening and you don't know what they are, and just let them happen. And like people, the camera will pick it up. Yeah.
It was a great experience.
That's amazing. She seems, so that's coming to Toronto Film Festival. This will, we record way in advance. But afterwards, hopefully people can go stream it.
Yeah. I don't know. We don't have a distributor yet. They're trying to sell it there. So they're aiming for theaters, you know, cause Willem's performance is amazing. So I think they really want to push him for stuff. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting.
But it's cool. A whole new world now. So who knows what's happening
with distributors. See, who knows what's going to happen? And like, what is your, so we don't know what's happening for, and in that it's going to be maybe for a while. Who knows? We don't know. We're in this weird spot. How are you staying calm throughout this whole thing?
Good question. Well, like I was working actually until on a show for FX until a week ago. So I was staying calm because I had a job. And now it's kind of like, I don't know. It's just kind of being hope, like not dwelling on it, being a little optimistic. You know, it's like I read Deadline and Hollywood Reporter and Variety every day to be like, there's any clues about the strike ending and stuff. But, you know, I could take a month off. So if it lasts a month, you know, more, I'm totally cool with that. If it lasts 6 months more, then, you know, you start have to be like, oh, you know, what's going to happen? But yeah, I guess it's basically just like, don't panic. You know, I also don't want to end up taking some long job that I hate. You know what I mean? Just because I'm worried about what I'm trying to avoid. But, you know, hopefully that works. You know.
Right. Yeah. Don't panic is a great, just like chill. Cause that's the thing is, once we panic, that's when things are going to like,
you make bad decisions. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I always feel like once it's like you wait for, you receive rather than grasp. It's like,
yes, exactly. I think I've mentioned this to you before. It's just like, you know, saying no a lot of times is the best thing you can do for your career. You know, you just wait for the right thing to come. You know, it's kind of luxury, you know, it's kind of a luxury to be able to do that sometimes, but you know, I think it keeps you out of being in a rut, you know, too. So.
Yeah.
And I like to do different, you know, like my background is such varied projects, you know, I really, you know, I don't want to get in a rut.
Yeah, totally. Because it was like, because you know, like if people know you for, you're recommended, and they're going to recommend you based on your previous work. So
yeah.
And what is, you know, like other times where you might be in a rut? What is some, we call it misfit inspiration? what is some misfit inspiration you have when you find yourself in a rut sometimes?
This too will end.
Do you like any books or people you listen to or movies or anything like that?
No, actually, you know, I know this, I don't want to sound pretentious, but like I watch Criterion, like I actually canceled all my streamers and I just like watch Criterion now. And it's so inspiring just to be like, oh, well, you know, I watched this insane George Romero movie last night. I don't even know what it's called. It doesn't make hardly any sense, but it's like from 1971 and just like glam, hippie and drugs and sex. And like, it was just like, oh, it just kind of, you know, I just like watching stuff like that where you're just like, oh, this is not, you know, a prestige TV box or the indie film box or the, you know what I mean? It's just, back then they were just doing such wild different things. I always find that is like the most inspiring thing to do, you know, or read. I think it's like, I don't really try and keep up on all the hot shows, you know, and that come out or all the big movies. It's just like, I don't care. You know what I mean? It's also just like, because I don't want to be part, you know, I just want to bring my own thing to it. So
yes.
I think if you're so much in that world, you just think that world's normal. That's what was great working with like Natasha Lyonne and Patricia too, is just like, they just reject all of that. So, you know what I mean? They're just like, you think you start getting into these patterns and they're both like, oh, I remember cutting something for Natasha once, the Russian doll, and it was just like completely ridiculous. And we just like laughed at it. I was like, okay, now let's take it out. She's like, no, we're keeping it. It's fun. You know what I mean? I was like, really? Yeah. And it was just like something completely absurd. I was like, oh yeah, you don't have to, you know, get into those little parameters. I love it. You know?
Yeah. So. I think sometimes it's like, we're all like watering our brains. Like, and if you water it with the same stuff, you're going to get the same flowers.
Yes, you need variety.
Yeah, totally. And so, but like, do people ever, like, so when you're in a meeting with someone, are they ever like, hey, well, it's like blank, blank, and blank, blank. Like, do you ever have to get caught in that situation, having to know what's going on?
I mean, people are always throwing around references. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, it's like that's just sort of on the same page, and then whether it sticks there or not. It was funny, I interviewed for this film a couple years ago, and the director had, you know, his mood board that he showed me and everything. And like, it was just so, there was so different stuff. It was like Wim Wenders and then like in a Western and then like Jean Dillman, that really slow Belgian movie. Mm-hmm. I was like, what is that? Like, that doesn't seem like it has anything to do, you know, I think it's a great film. But I was like, what does that have to do with this thing? He's like, oh, I just want the studio to know it's going to be different. Like, it was just this marker to be like, I don't want to do something normal, you know?
Yeah.
I can't even remember what the point, what we were talking about. The references. I think it's a place to get on, you know. And I think that's when you know you're working with someone well, if you can come up with strange, old films, you know what I mean? That you're like, oh, I love that too. And like, then you just know that you're on the same wavelength, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I just, you know, speaking of old films, I just showed, I had my nephews over and I've been showing them Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin.
Oh, amazing.
And this, we put on a 25-minute Buster Keaton movie. No words. These are hyperactive 7 and a 4-year-old.
And they were so into it.
Yeah. And later on, he was like another time he was like going on YouTube himself looking for Charlie Chaplin movies.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. So I had a pandemic moment of that too. Like where it was just like, I'm just going to watch Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin for, you know, in May of 2020 or whatever. Yeah. I went through all these different directors that like, I would just binge.
Yeah. Smart. Yeah, that's cool. You watered your brain with the good stuff.
Exactly.
It's so good. So I have a, what is, we always ask people, like, what's a moment when you knew that, like, the mainstream world just wasn't going to cut it for you?
Well, I think the moment, I mean, I was kind of raised that way. Like, my mom is a musician. My dad's a particle physicist and, like, they were just very different types of people, you know what I mean? So they always, like, encouraged me not to do the normal stuff. Like, they really pushed me to go to like study art.
That's amazing. Your parents are amazing.
My parents don't. You know? What would you do that for? They're like, oh yeah, you can go to this hippie school with no grades and study art. Great. But I think also, I think as mentioned before, like I accidentally rented Pink Flamingos on Betamax when I was like 11 or something, because I had a funny lady on the cover, which was divine. And it really did like open, like I just like went, whoa, like I watch it. I was just like, you know, I was only 11 or 12. I can't remember, but like my mind was blown. But you realize like, oh my God, there's another world out there. You know, it's kind of weird because you think about the underground like that. You had to go search it out and find it back then. Mm-hmm. You know, now everything is online. It's sort of like, I don't know how kids do it these days, like be inspired by thinking something's different because it's all there in your face.
Yes. Yes. You know? It's like, interesting. I always think about that too. Like I had to go find it and now it's just like, yeah. what if like I just discovered Patti Smith a few years ago. I don't know how that happened, but
you're from New York.
Like, I know. I was from like how it'd be. I was like the outer reaches of Queens. It's so, like no one was listening to Patti Smith. And I was like obsessed. And I'm like, what if I would have probably found out about her when I needed her, you know, back in the day. What if I grew up with Patti Smith?
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels like they're almost like pushing it to another. They're able to like go further faster maybe, or like develop faster because they have access to who they are sooner.
Or maybe they don't develop. I don't know. I kind of thought like I was in the East Village in the 90s and it was like there was no internet at the beginning of the 90s or just very minimal, you know, and so you had to know where to go in the crowd and like and all these people. There was such an incubator there, you know, with like Anthony and the Johnsons, who's now a Noni, you know what I mean? And like Justin Vivian Bond and the Scissor Sisters, like we're all just like in bars together, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And nobody was successful, but like they had this sort of built-in crowd where they worked it out, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
In private before it went big. And now it's like, unless you hit it on the first thing.
Yeah.
No, it just, I
see what you mean.
Like the pre-internet.
Yes. Yes. You can. I do worry about that with people too. Cause you can fail in private.
Yes, exactly. Or in front of like 15 of your friends at like a club.
Like in your community, right? Like, support you. Right.
And they'll come back the next time.
Yes. Yeah, right. Because like, who wants their like 19-year-old art project online?
I know.
No.
I know. Films were made with dolls, and I was like, oh, maybe I should take part of this Barbie moment and put those back out there. And I was like, no.
Oh, how fun! Yeah. Oh, I want to see those movies. I mean,
I'll send them to you.
Okay, please do. I'd love to see that. It's so fun. So I have a question. I have a question from one of my characters, Queens Marie. It'll be different than the other one that that Conor McGregor broke, but it'll be a different one. Okay.
I'm ready.
All right. So it's the same character though. Hi, I'm Queens Marie. So good to see you again. I'm so sorry. All this crazy stuff. Conor McGregor is such a fucking asshole. All right. So as you know, I'm the neighborhood's number one esthetician. Uh-huh. And so I'm just curious, you know, we have a little Botox booth. So people ask for a lot. And I just want to know, as an editor, how much is too much Botox? And do you ever, that's question part A and part B, have you ever run into where there's too much Botox and you're like, I don't know what the person's thinking?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot. I remember a showrunner came into my room once while I was editing and turned around and just, I'm going to non-gender them. They had just gotten like a Botox disaster. Just like sitting there with like huge lips, just like, don't look at me, don't look. And they knew too, you know what I mean? It was like, oh my God. But yeah, I mean, they do Botox and VFX too, you know, and I've seen that go too far on screen as well. Like,
so pay for Botox?
You don't have to do it anymore. No, unless you want it unless you're in theater. But for oh my God, they retouch almost everyone's face and hairlines and blah blah blah. That nowadays, it's insane. Everyone, they come in, they're like, oh wait, I have this. You know, if they're a big enough star, they don't do it for the, you know, extras. But
wow,
yeah, You didn't know that? Oh my God. There's so, it's such an editor pet peeve because they're like, oh, we can't get you dinner. And like, well, but we'll spend $5,000 to remove this pimple. Whatever. Yeah.
They are CGI-ing Botox?
Yeah. Your job is in danger.
Wow. My job is in danger. AI girl. Is screwing me too. Like, what the fuck?
You're the strike with the actors.
Oh my God. This is insane. Yeah. My mind is blown. Okay. Botox,
but they do a lot of smoothing. There's a lot of skin smoothing these days.
Wow. That is insane.
Yeah.
That is insane. So like, do you...
Standard.
Well, okay, with the skin smoothing though, the skin, their face still moves, right?
Yeah. I mean, I had one show I did where they went too far and it just looked like a mask, like kind of floating on the person's face a little bit. I mean, not terrible, but you're kind of like, that doesn't look normal.
You know? I see what you mean. Because because it's just like the Instagram filters when you're just like, who is that person? Yeah.
Exactly.
It's a little ridiculous. Because you could do it on another app and then you could download it and then do another filter on top of the filter and then it's fucking nuts.
Yeah,
that's another one. True. That's a hot tip. That's a hot tip. An editing on the fly tip. Okay, well, listen, thank you so much. I'm not going to tell anyone about this because I don't want people to be like, I don't need Botox because I make money. But thank you so much. You're the best. I'll give you 20% off still. Come to get your first facial. Okay, bye.
I'm going. Okay. Bye.
All right, cool. Thank you for playing along with Queensy.
Thank you.
Well, tell us where people can come find you.
Okay. I'm only on Twitter, which is now X. I don't really have, and I don't have Instagram or Facebook or anything. And I only joined Twitter because some marketing department told me I should. So I'm there if you want to contact me, or I think my contact information, I think is on IMDb Pro or something too. But yeah, you can find me. It's not too hard.
Yes.
They can email you.
Yes. Email me. I'll screen them for you.
Exactly. I need a manager.
Queens Marie will do it.
Perfect.
Cool.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for joining it, Misfits Making It.
Thank you.
Okay.